So we're looking now at agenda paper 7B on the clarifications to IFRS 15. The objective of this paper is to address the due process considerations and the comment letter period associated with the exposure draft for the clarifications to IFRS 15. The paper also asks for views on the proposed transition requirements and discusses the effective date. So the first topic for the board is around the effective date and the transition. We aren't required to propose an effective date in the ED, but given the particular circumstances around this, the staff thought it was useful to provide some indication around the effective date. So based on the current proposed timeline and a comment period of 90 days, we would expect that the project around the clarifications could be finalized towards the end of this year or early next year. And if that were the case, it should provide adequate time to finalize the clarifications with an effective date of the 1st of January 2018, which would be consistent with the proposed deferred effective date of IFRS 15. So we would recommend that early adoption would be permitted. That recommendation or that choice would be something different than IFRS 15. So if an entity chose to early adopt IFRS 15, they could adopt the clarifications either at the same time or they could adopt them at a later date. We haven't proposed any specific transition requirements. This would mean that entities would propose the or to implement the clarifications retrospectively. It's almost like they will go back and restate their financial statements as if these clarifications existed within IFRS 15 from the beginning. I think the reason why we thought that was appropriate is most of these are just clarifications to the existing principles. Any changes to the requirements are actually changes to the transition requirements of IFRS 15, and they're all optional. In many cases, entities probably will adopt IFRS 15 and the clarifications at the same time if we move forward with that process in the same timeline. In rare circumstances where an entity might adopt the clarifications afterwards and there is some sort of significant change, we didn't believe that providing additional transition provisions was useful, and it might create a lot of additional complexity. So that brings us to our first question on page 6, which is around the views on the proposed transition requirements.
I agree with what you're proposing in terms of intent. I think, though, that based on experience with transition requirements, you have to be very explicit. And I'm not sure that I would have got to the same place you have in terms of if somebody was to subsequently apply the clarifications and they'd applied the modified cumulative catch-up approach. I'm not sure that retrospective application would work in the way that you're intending. I agree, you might get there, but I'm not sure that I'd definitely get there. So I just think I'd err on the side of caution and just say more, and that's what the how you expect it to work. But otherwise, I agree.
Doc? Yes, I disagree with your paragraph 19B. I think we should allow prospective approach for the change after the IFRS 15. Otherwise, we are requiring to restate twice for those companies who chose the restatement. So those companies who adopted IFRS earlier than this clarification, they have already restated the previous year. And then all of a sudden, there is a clarification. Although it's a clarification, there is a case they have to change their practice. Then they have to restate the previous year again. So within a short period of time, asking restatement is twice is unacceptable. And I think we have to be very mindful that we have already allowed early application. And we are dealing with hundreds of jurisdictions which have different stages of adoption of IFRS. And also, if you look at India, India is going to mandate IFRS 15 equivalent from the year 2016. They have already invested system change. And then all of a sudden, we are going to change. and then require restatement twice. It's unacceptable. So it's almost penalizing those who have prepared earlier, those who have believed that our IFRS 15 was finalized. But all of a sudden, we are saying that this was not finalized. So we had a similar thing in the IFRS 9. So if we keep doing that, we will lose credibility, and we will underpin our enforcement value of the IFRS. So therefore, I think we have to provide enough consideration for those who have adopted earlier, as long as we provide earlier application.
So are you suggesting that they should apply these on a prospective basis, TAC, these amendments? On a prospective basis?
Prospective, yeah. For only for the clarification yeah. differences.
So
for those who have adopted IFRS 15 this year, and then mandate the clarification 2018, so for those 3 years, they can use current IFRS 15 without expecting retrospective application. Otherwise, if you are in the position to prepare for next year or year 2017, you have to prepare it with knowing that it must be restated. So it's really odd. So my fear is they are going to delay application of IFRS 15, or especially my concern is for those who are joining to IFRS in 2017 or in 2016. So they have already prepared for the finalized IFRS 15, but all of a sudden in 2018 they have to comply with new IFRS 15. So therefore,
but do you not think you're perhaps? I mean, I understand the concern, and I don't want to appear sort of glib about it, but these are clarifications and they're very limited in their scope, and hopefully we can finalise the board's intentions about these clarifications towards this year as well. So I mean, it's unlikely that these clarifications are going to affect all entities in any significant way, and to some degree, if for example on licences perhaps they did affect you in a significant way, then that would seem to me to say that it does need to be retrospective, otherwise you're going to have lack of comparability running on for quite an extensive period of time. So I understand the concern, but I think just thinking about the nature of these amendments, I mean, potentially one thing the board could consider doing, I guess, at when we come to finalize these, would be to think about, well, you could set an effective date for the amendments beyond IFRS 15. So they would be there for people, let's say.
Don't start.
It would give people more of a gap between the original IFRS 15 and the amendments. Potentially, you could consider that, and that would seem to me potentially better.
Way
to go. In my mind, it is not so complicated. It's very simple. But what you say may be wrong. That is, for nearly 99% of the company, they will apply the similar transitional requirement. That is, there is default retrospective applications. But at the same time, we have modified approach applicable to you. Means, for those companies start to use the 18, they will follow exactly the same the transitional requirements. Those who will apply from next year and from 17, I don't think that the company will choose different traditional the approaches for them. So I think only the company already decide to use now, then create a problem, or before. So those companies apply this amendment together with the new standards, there's no problem. So what you should emphasize is not full retrospective applications. Mm-hmm. Full retrospective is default. We already give you the simplified way. So I would feel it's very simple, but you should describe correctly. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that maybe if I understand you, Wigger, you're maybe
you're maybe drawing out the same point that Sue said is worth spelling out explicitly, is that in the ED, when we, if we say maybe we shouldn't call it fully retrospective application,
yeah,
all we want to be clear about is that when you apply the amendments and how you do that, we're not overriding the transition relief approaches that are already in IFRS 15. So I think that's, you know, the same point that, that Sue is making, and hopefully if we can make that explicit and clear, you know, that that's helpful.
Mary?
I'm piling on to that point because I had had the same concern that, that Sue started out with, and I would not have, if I just read cold the word, have been comfortable that, that we were intending to basically say bake it in as if you'd included it the first time around in your adoption. I would hesitate actually to spell out lots and lots and lots of therefore you do this or therefore you do that. I think it's more, if you look back at paragraph 19, at the top of page 6, it's having an explicit statement that the objective should be to apply them from the date of initial application of the original as if these amendments had already always been incorporated. And just saying that, not a lot more rather than spelling out. On the second point that, that Tuck raised, I, like Henry, have very significant concerns about if it's a big impact, making it prospective, and that's presumably the time that people would care. But I think the invitation to comment offers us a chance to ask specifically if we have given a proper consideration of the issues that might arise and get some sense of the scale of those who might be adopting IFRS 15 early and don't want to have to go back and revisit some of the decisions they've made in their systems changes to get to that early implementation just as they're trying to finalize that, especially if it's part of the process of moving to IFRS as a whole. But I, like Henry, I think I would spell out in the invitation to comment that if that were the case, before you'd said it, I'd have the same thought that then I would be minded to give a bigger window before you have to go back and restate rather than exempting somebody from restatement. So, but I don't think I'd propose that.
No.
I think I just would have a discussion around this that our assumption is premised on this being clarifications without big impacts. But if we've got it wrong, tell us.
Taking into account the fact that transition to IFRS 15 is in itself already complex enough with different ways of doing the transition, I would like to keep this whole thing as simple as possible, i.e. have an effective date of those amendments the same as the main IFRS 15, and if someone chooses to early adopt, they would have to early adopt the amendments at the same time. It's a package, a choice. If they don't want to do it, they go to 1/1/18. If they want to adopt early, they go. The last thing I want to see is two parallel different IFRS 15 running at the same time, with entities choosing only part of IFRS 15 and deferring a part of it and others doing the whole thing. I think for the market it's terrible. I think we have to try to keep comparability as much as we can. So let's do a package, either early adopted adoption or 1/1/18.
Yeah, I mean, Philippe, I think that's difficult because IFRS 15 is out there and people, as Tak is saying, are planning to early adopt. And I think I think it would be.
I can amend my proposal and say if you have already adopted IFRS 15 at the time this thing is issued, okay, then you have a special case. But most have not early adopted. I think the bulk have not yet adopted.
Whole jurisdictions coming on in 2016.
We had a similar issue as this when we killed old versions of IFRS 9, where we were concerned that some people would be just about to go live as we published the new version of IFRS 9, and so we created this gap. I think, while I agree with you in spirit, Philippe, I think it's difficult because even if you said, okay, if you're early applying, but after we publish this document, you need to do it as a package. What if they've already done all of the work based on the old words? So I think it.
This discussion demonstrates how, from a due process point of view, how questionable it is to have a pre-implementation review of a standard.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But I think we can make a special regime. And say if you have adopted the standard by a certain date, then you can do this. If you have not adopted, then you take the rule.
Can I make a comment just quickly to what Hans said? Actually, we shouldn't have done that. That's the first point. However, we have done it. Once we have done it, we should take, you know, serious consideration for those who believed us. Do not penalize those who believed us. Do not penalize those who are preparing now.
Yeah,
we shouldn't reward
the staff take this possible problem. I think in practice is going to be probably negligible. But
yeah,
take it into account. Yeah. Okay. Then let's go through the questions, please.
What do we want to open question then?
Yes. So I think just if we just on question one. I mean, I think what we hear is saying.
Take general agreement
to the methodology, but to actually just be more specific about it. So who agrees with that?
Depends on what kind of resentment you're going to take.
And then finally,
to Andrew. For
yeah, so I think the next question we have is on page 8, and this just relates to the comment period. We're proposing a comment period of 90 days. And
just to let you know that effectively, we discussed that with the Due Process Oversight Committee last week, and they've agreed on the circumstances that 90 days is appropriate if you decide to do that.
Good.
So was that 14 votes?
Was it?
Yes, so the final section is just around the normal due process requirements and obviously a question about whether any board members intends to dissent on the clarification.
It depends on transition.
Well, I didn't make my comment for nothing. This way of decision making is far from optimal, but we are where we are. Okay. So does anyone want to dissent?
Yeah, depends on the
transition. Are we happy with the due process?
Yes.
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 Okay.
Can we have the table?
Thank you.